Hey, I'm Jade, and you're listening to Most Wanted.
Hello, and welcome back to Most Wanted. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Amanda.
How you doing this week, sissy?
Doing pretty well. This is a little behind the curtain. We were just talking about daylight savings and how it's kicking our ass today.
Yeah.
So
we are struggling.
Yeah, we're very tired. We lost that hour of sleep. It's a bummer.
It's a huge bummer. But again, by the time this comes out, we're going to be over it.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be totally fine. We'll but right like, now, we're
it's
like...
It's still light at 7 p.m. We're so happy.
I know. Well, so I was laying on the couch this morning and I was like, it's 6:15. Why is the sun coming out? And I was like, no, I mean, yay, but...
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, what's new with you this week? Have you watched or read anything cool? I don't usually ask you this question.
No, we started Only Murders in the Building last
so
night.
So good.
Yeah, we didn't. I think we're on episode 4, but yeah. Oh my gosh, it was so good.
Yep, we are not caught up. We've watched the first 2 seasons and not the 3rd yet.
But okay.
So good. The actors are so good.
I was like, I've already loved Selena Gomez for a long time, but I've never really seen much with Martin Short in it. He's so funny.
The only Martin Short movie I've ever seen, Jungle to Jungle.
He's in Jungle to Jungle?
Yes. He plays like Tim Allen's friend or something. He's the one that has the exotic fish that...
That's no, yes. It's not. Yes, no, it's not. Is it really?
I'm like 99% sure that's Martin Short.
Oh my god, he is.
I can't remember his name, but yeah, he's the one with the exotic fish that Mimi Siku.
Richard Kempster.
Yeah, he cooks them over the fire.
Oh.
I'm so happy you're watching that show, though. It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. All right, are you ready for? Ready to play What's My Crime?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So we're in our last week of Women's History Month, where we're covering young women whose lives were cut too short. And the story I'm going to tell you today, I'm going to say up front, it's pretty upsetting.
Okay.
I felt it was important to cover it. I was initially going to cover it later, like in a later episode, and we ended up moving it up for, you know, just reasons. But it's kind of a good way to end this because it's just, it's upsetting. It shows such escalation. It shows the danger for women. And I just find it important to tell the story. So I'm covering the murder of Lauren McCluskey this week. And I don't know how much humor there's going to be in this episode as another little spoiler, but
okay.
I'm hoping that you're pretty good at finding levity where it's appropriate. So
well, we talked about Jungle to Jungle, so
I know. I mean, right?
Maybe I'll just make maybe a Jungle to Jungle reference.
Yeah, maybe that's the best we could do this week. So now my question for you, Lauren, is what do you know about this case, if anything?
I know that she is a runner and she was in college, is in college. When she's murdered, she's in college. That's what I know.
Yep. So I'll go into sources. The content warnings are pretty extensive for this episode. So I read quite a bit about Lauren McCluskey this week. Sources include articles from the Deseret News, CBS News, the Salt Lake Tribune, ABC News, the Salt Lake Magazine, NBC News, and the Daily Utah Chronicle. I watched an amazing documentary on ESPN's YouTube channel that was like ESPN Investigates. It was super good. Highly recommend. I'll talk about that more as the episode goes on. And then I listened to a few podcasts, including an episode of Court Junkie, an episode of Murder in America, and a 2-part series in the podcast Least of These. And now content warnings. Like I said, extensive. It includes intimate partner violence, manipulation and gaslighting, stalking, abuse, revenge porn, murder, suicide, and mentions of child sex abuse and rape and sexual assault. And the police suck.
Woof. Well, yeah, I think we knew that, but...
Yeah. Yep. And a lot of it isn't super pertinent to like the center of our story, but I just... There's so much going on in this story and all of it's bad that like, I just wanted to make sure that it's all mentioned in case this is sensitive for people.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to start with the story of Lauren McCluskey's early life.
Okay.
Lauren Jennifer McCluskey was born on February 12th, 1997.
Holy shit, she's so young.
I know. And she was born in Berkeley, California, where both of her parents were finishing their PhDs at the University of California.
Very cool.
Yeah. In August 1998, her family moved to Pullman, Washington, to join the faculty at Washington State University. Hmm. And after they moved, they had a son named Ryan. The McCluskeys were a happy nuclear family in a college town, and they lived at the end of a cul-de-sac, and the kids could play outside, and they ran around all the time. They were like outside kids, kind of like you and I were outside
kids. Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So her mom, Jill, is a professor still at Washington State in the economics department. Her dad, Matt, is a professor in the physics department, so they're still in Pullman to this day.
Oh, wow.
And it sounds like Lauren truly had a pretty ideal childhood. It might be kind of weird telling the story too, because Lauren's in the story and you're Lauren. So sorry if this gets confusing to listeners at all. From a very young age, Lauren started to show her athletic ability. She was walking at 9 months old and climbing trees by around 2 years old.
Okay. That is also how you know we're not talking about me. Athletic? Nah. Climbing trees, though. I did do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And where I never really did, I was terrified of falling. So you were more of the outside adventure person than I was. Anyway, back to the story. We're a little bit avoiding the story because it is pretty terrible.
100%. I'm very sorry.
So Lauren's parents let her join the local Junior Olympic track and field team. And when she was 8 years old, she set records in the high jump, the long jump, and the 400 meter run.
Holy shit.
Yep. So
good for you, girlfriend.
Right. Her mom, Jill, told her that if she qualified for nationals when she was nine, they'd take her.
Oh.
And she did.
Jill, way to support. Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Awesome.
Yep. So throughout the rest of her childhood, Lauren would continue to compete at the national level, earning USA Track and Field All-American 19 times.
Holy shit.
And setting many USA Track and Field youth records, some of which still stand.
Oh my gosh.
She also set the U20 record for the heptathlon when she was in high school. And she then competed in high school in Washington and helped Pullman High School go to state. And she set a couple of Washington State high school records. She was quite literally a track star.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So like your memory of her as a runner. Yes,
yeah. She was. Yeah. What's the heptathlon
is, it's one of those multi events where like the men have the decathlon, which is I think 10 events and you get scores in all of them. So you have to be super well-rounded, and women don't do all 10. They do heptathlon, I think is 7.
Okay.
I think. So they do fewer than 10, but like a bunch of multi-events. So
okay.
She did running, but she also did field stuff like shot put and discus and stuff.
Oh
like
my
that.
Gosh, that would be so cool.
Yeah, there's a lot of videos of her at the college level throwing a javelin, which is pretty cool. Yeah.
That's so badass.
She was just cool all around. Lauren was also just very well-rounded. She spent a lot of her spare time volunteering at the Whitman County Humane Society to help socialize cats for adoption. I know. She was a cat person.
Yeah. Lauren after my own heart.
Exactly. I thought I was writing this and I was like, our Lauren's going to love this, Lauren.
I am.
Yeah. She also volunteered for the local YMCA and the Special Olympics, and she was just known as a great friend. She was a great student. Like, she was kind of everything.
Yeah.
Lauren graduated from Pullman High School with honors in 2015 and accepted a track and field scholarship to the University of Utah. There, she competed for the Utes and worked toward a degree in communications. The Utes are their mascot. Don't ask questions.
Okay, I was like... Okay, sorry.
It's one of those mascots that probably won't remain around forever because it's the name of a tribe.
Yeah.
But for the time being, they're still the Utes. We're just going to go
okie dokie
for now. Yep. So she worked toward a degree in communications where she won multiple all academic awards through athletics. So like her GPA was high enough that she was all academic several times on the track and field team.
Oh my gosh.
She was also a member of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes on campus and attended a local church in Salt Lake City on the weekends.
So is she Mormon?
No.
Okay. Mm-mm.
No, but she sounds like a just wonderful person all around.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yep. Throughout
I'm
going to
be really sad.
You're
going to
be really sad.
Fuck.
Yeah. Throughout her time in high school and college, she didn't really date. That was kind of on the back burner because she was doing all of this other stuff.
She was literally doing everything else.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So she was pretty focused on her goals and her friends and her schooling and her faith. And she didn't really want anything messing with that for most of her, you know, growing up years. Mm-hmm. But in the fall of her senior year of college, she and her best friend in college named Alex. Alex is a great friend. We're going to hear a lot about Alex in the story.
Okay.
They decided to start having a little more fun when they could. They were seniors now.
So yeah, like, absolutely.
Sure. And they're meaning they could drink and all that.
Yep.
So that's what brought them to the newly opened bar in Salt Lake City called the London Bell on September 2nd, 2018.
Okay.
So right also, at the beginning of senior year.
I realized that you said she was part of Fellowship of Christian Athletes, and then mm-hmm. I still asked you if she was Mormon. I'm very sorry.
It's okay. I think Mormons, oh my gosh, are they technically Christian and just like a weird offshoot? That I don't actually know.
You know what? I will do some research and let you know next week when we talk about Mormons.
Perfect. Great. That sounds great. anyway, so they're at the London Bell. It's September 2nd, 2018. That I'm saying the date again because it ends up being important for the timeline.
Yep.
She and Alex had a couple of drinks and they noticed that there was a cute bouncer working the door who had let them in. He kept
never
walking
trust
by.
A bouncer. I'm just kidding. Well, I. Well.
So this bouncer kept walking by and smiling at Lauren, and Alex helped Lauren work up the courage to give him her number.
Aww.
He introduced.
Oh, meet cute, but I'm going to hate it later. I'm very sorry. Yeah. I forgot what we were doing here.
We're just telling a nice, cute story.
That's like, oh,
no, we're not.
Damn
we're
it.
Not. Yeah. He introduced himself to them as Sean Fields, and they knew he was a little bit older, but Lauren had always been kind of mature for her age, so sure. They didn't really worry about that.
Right.
On their first date, he brought Lauren flowers, and he kind of wined and dined her, and she was immediately smitten. She called her mom afterwards, and I was just like, this was the best first date of my life.
And, how much older are we talking?
Well, we're going to get into that.
Okay.
Her mom was concerned that he was older.
Okay.
He told them that he was 28 and she was 21.
22. Oh, okay. Well, you know what?
But like, so, you know, a little bit older.
Okay.
But so now we're going to move on. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about Lauren's relationship with Sean Fields.
Okay.
So they got serious really quickly. He was not a student at the University of Utah, but he told her that he was getting an associate's degree in computer programming or something like that.
Okay.
At a local community college.
Okay.
And even though he didn't have an affiliation to the University of Utah campus, he started spending most of his nights with Lauren in her dorm room, like immediately after they started dating.
Why?
Good question.
Is he homeless?
He's not homeless, to my knowledge.
Okay.
But I think there were reasons he wanted to be with her at night.
As a 28-year-old, I could not imagine back to a dorm.
No, absolutely not. No. So when he started spending most of his nights there and Lauren stopped hanging out with her friends at night.
Oh, God.
Her friends started getting a little bit worried.
Yep.
Lauren had always prioritized her schoolwork, but she started looking exhausted during the day and she started to kind of withdraw. It was too early in the semester to know if her grades had dropped, but it wouldn't have surprised me if her schoolwork started taking a backseat to this relationship. Her friends noticed that she would tell them that she had to ask Sean's permission to hang out with them.
No.
Or she had to tell him where she was at all times.
Nope.
He started forcing her to get up at 2 a.m. to pick him up from his bouncer shifts. So
hell no.
Yeah, so she wasn't getting good sleep because then she'd bring him back to her dorm room.
And he was probably wanting to talk or whatever because he's a night owl.
Yeah.
She's in college.
Yep.
Leave her the fuck alone.
Yep. Exactly. And then if he called and she was with friends or wherever, she had to answer or he'd be like really mad.
Oh, God.
All of this was cause for concern in itself, particularly since this was basically Lauren's first relationship.
Oh, my God.
And it was like super intense. And her friends very fairly felt it was a bit much.
Oh, God.
They got extra concerned when Lauren told them that Sean was bringing her shooting at a local range because he wanted to buy her a gun to protect herself from other men.
Okay.
Obviously, guns weren't allowed on campus because
generally
they're not allowed on college campuses. I think there are some exceptions in open carry states, but generally not allowed on college campuses. And Lauren's friend, Lauren's friends reported this to a friend of theirs who worked in the housing office on campus.
Mm-hmm.
That friend was named Diamond, and she reported it up the chain, and she was told not to worry. They'd get to it. They'd try to figure out how to either keep this guy out or what they should do in this situation. They're like, we'll handle it. The last straw for Lauren's friends was when they noticed that Lauren had some bruises on her arms.
Fuck that.
Yep. This, combined with being withdrawn and exhausted, was more than enough cause for concern.
Absolutely.
And Lauren was at the end of her rope too, I think, even if she didn't really know what to do or that's how she was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to point out that this was all in 3 weeks. Yeah. This was like end September.
3 weeks?
Yeah. Yep. This was all, like, when I say it got intense fast, like, it was insanely fast.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Maybe a month, but like 3 to 4 weeks.
Oh my God.
Really not long enough for any of this nonsense to be happening. And like,
manipulation is crazy.
Yes. Yep. And like, sure, it's her first relationship, and I'm sure some of her friends had a little more experience. And if they're watching from the outside, they're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, definitely.
And we don't victim blame on this podcast. I was just saying that in like, as her friend, they're probably watching it like, whoa,
yeah.
whoa, you deserve so much better than this dude.
Yeah.
One day in early October, like a month after they met.
Holy shit.
Sean was borrowing Lauren's car during the day to run some errands. He did this often. Yep, that's what I'm saying. Like,
are you sure he's not homeless?
I'm not sure he's not homeless, but I'm pretty sure he's not homeless.
What the fuck?
Because he like had a job. He was sleeping somewhere before he met Lauren.
Yeah, probably someone else that he almost.
I mean, you're maybe right. I don't know where he was living. He was basically living with Lauren. So,
does he currently live in a jail cell?
He doesn't currently live.
Got it.
So he like I said, he borrowed her car often. But this time, he happened to leave his driver's license behind. And I don't know if it was like he left his whole wallet or like it was in his pocket and she found it. I'm not really sure. But she found his driver's license.
How old is this man?
She noticed something odd. I'm ignoring your question, but I will be answering it in a minute. Sean Fields wasn't the name on his license at all. His name was Melvin Sean Rowland. And Sean had told Lauren that he was 28. But his license showed that he was actually 37.
Oh,
yeah. Like, can you? Okay. So step back. Neither of us are even 37 years old. And I cannot imagine sleeping in a twin size bed in a dorm room with someone. Like, my back couldn't take it for one. But like, it makes it so much creepier from top to bottom.
And this is not a popular opinion. Normally, age gaps do not bother me, like, right. At all. Whatever. That's mm-hmm. fine. Fuck this.
Yeah.
She's 21. He's 37.
Yep. And he lied to her about it.
I was going to say, if you have to lie about your age, yes. That's the problem.
If you have to lie about your age, you're probably either too old or too young.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, yep. If you're lying, you don't want them to know.
Yeah. You're doing something wrong. Yes, you know something exactly. is wrong.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So obviously this freaked Lauren out, because basically the basis of their entire relationship was a lie.
Absolutely.
He lied about his name.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God.
Like, the whole thing is a lie. So, she called her friend Alex, who started Googling him. And
Alex is a bad bitch, isn't she?
Oh, yes. Alex is the best.
Cool.
And the two of them realized that he had a criminal record.
Well, another reason to lie about your fucking name.
Right. And age.
And age.
And that's when Lauren was very thankful that it was almost fall break time and she could go home to Pullman for a long weekend and clear her head.
Yeah.
So she did. So now I'm going to tell you a little bit about Melvin Rowland.
Okay.
So Lauren got home to Pullman and she and her best friend from high school sat together in Lauren's parents' house and they Googled Melvin Rowland.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that he didn't just have a criminal record. He'd spent about 10 years in prison. And he'd been released less than 6 months before Lauren met him.
Oh, my God.
So let's talk a little bit about the real guy here, not the guy he told Lauren he was.
Yeah.
Melvin Sean Rowland was born in Brooklyn, New York, and then was adopted by an older couple before ending up in a state-run home in his teens after that older couple died.
Oh, man.
He then somehow ended up in California at a Buddhist institute. I wish I had more information on that, but I don't.
Okay.
And then he joined the Job Corps, and he took some classes at Salt Lake Community College, and he ended up getting a job as a certified nurse assistant.
Uh-oh.
All that sounds fine, but...
Except for the fact that he did 10 years in prison.
Well, yep. Yeah, so we're going to get to that. The rest of the history gets quite a bit darker. Around 2013, a police department in Utah was conducting a... Actually, it's probably earlier than that now that I'm thinking about the math. Maybe it's 2003.
Okay.
Either way, it's earlier, like yep. Long before he met Lauren. A police department in Utah was conducting a sting operation on one of those nasty child sex websites. So that's why I had lots and lots of content warnings for this.
Oh my God. Okay.
And while an undercover was pretending to be a 13-year-old girl, he started making plans to meet up with 20-plus-year-old Melvin Rowland.
Oh my God.
Thankfully, there was no 13-year-old girl in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And Rowland was arrested
mm-hmm.
for like soliciting sex from a minor.
Yeah.
Like yeah. While in custody, he admitted to raping a 17-year-old at a party a couple weeks earlier.
What the fuck?
Yep.
Go to hell.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
So he was convicted on all this stuff, and mm-hmm. he served almost 10 years in prison. Once he was let out, he was put on probation. I almost said obviously, but then 2 weeks ago, we talked about the guy that killed Drew Shadeen, who was not put on probation when he Correct. Was let out. So now I can no longer say obviously he was put on probation.
Right. Right.
So Rowland couldn't keep it together if his life depended on it. That's a bit of a foreshadow, but you probably already know what's coming anyway, just based on the title of this episode.
Yes.
So he was sent back to prison twice for probation violations.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was for possessing pornography. So his restrictions when he was let out based on what he was arrested for was he couldn't have social media. He couldn't really use the internet. He wasn't supposed to have any porn. He, you know, pretty extensive restrictions because of what he was yeah. arrested for. So first one was he possessed pornography. They found it when they were doing like a parole officer visit at his home. Another was for failure to complete therapy. And that sent him back too, because he was just like, this is bullshit. And they're like, no, it's not. You're going to prison.
Good.
So he wasn't supposed to, like I just said, he wasn't supposed to have social media, but he did have a Facebook account when he met Lauren. So he's already violating probation again.
Yeah.
He was on dating websites when he met Lauren.
No.
Which is like, he
Come
was like,
on.
He made a point at some point to his probation officer, like, I didn't know dating sites were social media.
What?
What do you think you're trying to do here? Do you not consider dating being social? You weirdo?
Part of his probation should have been he's not allowed to be around women. Just
I mean, yeah. Yeah, honestly.
Mm.
He's like the shittiest type of person.
And he worked at a bar.
He was a bouncer at a bar. Yep.
Oh my God. The amount of... Oh my yeah, God.
The number of women that he was encountering every night.
Oh my God.
At a bar called the London Bell.
Right. Yep. Oh God.
And remember how he took Lauren shooting?
And was he buying her
a gun? He was a felon.
Yeah, he can't be in possession of a firearm. Oh yep. my God.
Yep. It was on and on like that. Like he just could not keep it together. He couldn't do his restrictions. He just didn't even really try. At one point, he told the parole board that if they kept sending probation officers to his home, he'd probably kill the officer.
What?
Like, and they just...
Instant jail.
I agree. But they just were like, we don't think he'll do that.
Could you imagine then being that probation officer and being like, right? Yeah, I guess my life just doesn't fucking matter. Right. Very cool.
So I talk about this later too. They actually interview his last probation officer on the ESPN documentary. And because I think a lot of people put a lot of blame in this case on probation and parole in Utah, but it was a female probation officer for one.
Fucking great.
And she was saying like, no one communicated. Like she didn't know most of this stuff.
Oh my God. Like, that is so fucking scary.
Yes. Like the lack of transparency between agencies in this case is a huge failure, and we're going to get into lots of failures later on in this story. Again, laughing, not because it's funny at all. To your point, he should have never been out of prison. He was violent, he was dangerous, and worst of all, he was impulsive. So Lauren and her friend were learning all of this information basically from public records searching. They found his rap sheet. They found his mug shots. They found all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Lauren knew she had to break up with him when she got back to campus, but she was supposed to take him to a friend's wedding that first evening back.
Nope.
So she was just like, what do I do? When she got back to her dorm room on October 9th, 2018, she called her friend Alex for advice. And I have to say, I've said this already, I hope everyone has a friend like Alex, truly. Yeah. Alex told Lauren to not go to that wedding.
Yeah.
And to meet Roland in a public place to break up with him. So they weren't alone together when it happened.
Okay.
That was going to be tricky, Lauren said, because Roland had borrowed her car while she was home for break, and he still had it.
Oh my God.
What Lauren didn't know during this conversation is that Roland was watching her through the window of her dorm. He was outside watching her talk on the phone to her friend Alex.
So he could hear this whole, her side of the conversation is what we think.
It's not 100% clear if he could hear, but he could see her. And it seemed like whether he could hear or not, he could kind of understand what she was doing.
I was just about to ask if he knew that she knew.
Not yet.
Okay.
Once she hung up with Alex, Roland burst into her dorm room without knocking to berate her for talking about their relationship with other people, which is why I think he didn't know what she knew. He just didn't want her to be discussing him with other people. So he barges into her room.
Yeah.
He's yelling at her about talking about their relationship. And like, first of all, my guy, this is what women do.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about our relationships with our friends. That is what we do. And I that's, to me, that's just like a common thing. Every one of my friends, I know about their relationships.
Absolutely.
That's, it's part of like being friends. And then an unwritten friend code is like, it stays between friends too.
Absolutely.
Like, that's kind of how it.
Absolutely.
That's how it works. So Roland, you have no idea what you're doing or talking about or any of this.
You're fucking in your 30s, dude.
Yeah.
You don't understand 21-year-old girls. That shut the fuck up. Get the fuck out.
Point. Mm-hmm. Yep. So he's yelling at her. Lauren confronts him about his lies in this conversation.
In her dorm room.
In her
just
dorm
the
room.
Two of them.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Hang on a second.
So while he's yelling at her in her dorm room, Lauren confronted Roland about his lies. And it seems like he had a story prepared to tell her because I think he assumed she'd eventually figure it out that he wasn't Sean Fields.
Okay.
So he said that he was framed. That, that the 17-year-old at the fraternity party that he had gone to had set him up.
No, dude, you said you raped her.
Yep. No.
You admitted to that.
She set him up, though.
But you admitted to that.
No. She set him up.
Bro.
No. She set him up. This is probably, I'm assuming this was the conversation.
Yes, I know. Oh, my God. You fucking monster.
He said that he only pleaded guilty because he had felt forced to.
Because you did it.
Well, yeah. He never addressed the soliciting a minor online part to Lauren. And I'm pretty sure, based on what we know about the relationship already and how scared she was about confronting him, his gaslighting was probably like I can't even imagine. Yeah. Like, she was probably so confused.
Probably.
At this point, as like what to believe, what not to believe,
what's the truth, scary. What's not.
Yeah. So Lauren, to her credit, stuck to her guns.
Good for her.
Ended the relationship anyway.
Good for her.
None of what he said convinced her otherwise. She tried multiple times to make him leave, but he refused to leave her room. He stayed there the whole night, and Lauren told Alex the next day that every time she tried to get him to leave in the middle of the night, he'd rape her. And like, she didn't use that word. She said that he would force himself on her.
Oh my God.
But like, that's what she meant. So Yeah, that was multiple times in the middle of the night. Lauren was feeling stuck. She was terrified.
Does she have a roommate?
No.
Okay.
Nope. So I heard different stories on whether it was considered a dorm or like an on-campus apartment.
Okay.
But either way, she had a ground floor room and she lived by herself.
I was also thinking, does she not have neighbors? Nobody heard them arguing?
That I don't know. And I mean, it was like the day that everyone was coming back from break.
Maybe yeah, I know.
Didn't make it back. I know. Like it's, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So the next morning, Lauren lied to Roland. She told him that she had to go to track practice and she had to leave. Yeah. Now, he left finally and he did take her car.
Fucking keep it. I know that that's not. I know. Yep. I understand.
Yep. She did not actually have practice. She called Alex instead. Mm-hmm. And she filled Alex in on the night she'd had. And that's when the text started. So we're going to pick up the story here after we take a quick break for an ad. Have you ever had one of those days where you really want to unwind with a fruity cocktail, but you don't want to have a drink? This used to happen to me a lot in the evenings. I was always a bit of a lightweight, and when I had to be productive in the evenings, it was a no alcohol rule for me. These are the perfect nights for Moment Botanical Water, which uses natural adaptogens for their calming properties to reduce your cortisol levels and activate your alpha brainwaves. What does that mean? It means not only is this water delicious, but it can also help you manage stress, enhance your brain function and creativity, and improve your sleep quality. There's also no added sugar and no caffeine, so you can unwind and get creative while drinking Moment. Visit drinkmoment.com and use promo code MOSTWANTEDAMANDA at checkout for 15% off.
Should I say that I'm no longer mad at you?
Yeah.
I was mad at you before we went into the ad break, yeah, and I'm not mad.
For the break.
Yeah, I'm not mad at you anymore.
Okay. So I'm going to go back into the story so you can definitely not be mad at me.
Okay.
So this part of the story I've titled Stalker. Lauren started receiving texts from random numbers on October 10th, 2018. They started out fairly benign, apparently from Roland's friends. "Why did you break up with the big guy?" one said. "He really loves you."
Wait, is this him or is this actually his friends?
It's him.
Okay.
She the big
guy?
Know that.
Well, right. But the big guy, that's what you're going to...
Apparently.
Yeah. Fucking gross. Okay. Yep.
Another one came in asking Lauren about her car, stating that the friend of Roland's, in quotes, was going to drop it off with Lauren because Roland couldn't stand to look at her.
Oh, poor you.
Boo-hoo. The text continued to escalate until one told her to go kill herself.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And so she didn't answer any of them.
Good.
I think that's probably why they escalated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because she wasn't engaging,
right,
would be my guess. So now Lauren at this point had been texting with Roland previously pretty consistently for the last month. Mm. So she noticed a lot of the same grammatical errors and patterns,
yeah,
in these texts as in his texts. In hindsight, you and I already came to this conclusion. This was all Roland.
Right. Yeah.
Like I'm not saying he didn't have any friends. He didn't have any friends who were texting Lauren.
He probably didn't have any friends.
He might
he
not have.
He sounds
had.
Like someone yeah. that cannot, can he can't maintain anything.
Yeah. Well, and because he wants it to be under his complete control and like yeah. friends aren't going to go for that.
That's fuck no.
Ridiculous. Yeah. So at the time, Lauren was really scared. Even in seeing, like, when she was able to take a step back and see, like, this is probably all him, that's mm-hmm. still really scary.
That's very scary.
To be getting texts from random numbers. You don't know where he's getting these other phones. Who are these people that he's...
Well, I mean, when was this, 2018?
2018.
I mean, there are apps where you can...
There are.
But still, I mean, it's like you can't block a number fast enough.
Yeah.
You know, he still can just keep getting yep. all these new numbers. It's yep. so scary.
Yep. So Lauren did what you and I have talked about young people do on several episodes. She called her mom.
Yeah.
Jill McCluskey was up in Pullman, Washington, but she did generally speak to Lauren almost every day.
Okay.
This stopped when she was in the midst of her relationship with Roland. He didn't like her talking to people, but now that they're broken up, she has started talking to her mom regularly again like she used to.
I can't even imagine.
Right? It's like a mom.
Yeah, like that's your daughter, and all of a sudden she.
Yeah, it's and they're so sad. Like 600 miles away.
Yeah,
like yeah, it's just it. Yeah, it'd be scary from all ends. Mm-hmm. When Jill found out what had been going on about Lauren's breakup and that Roland had her car, Jill was really worried. Mm-hmm. She was afraid that Roland was going to hurt Lauren, which with the escalating texts, I can totally see.
Definitely.
Plus the probable abuse that had been going on with the bruises and whatnot.
Yeah.
And while Lauren was initially dissuaded, she didn't want to get anyone else involved. She thought she could handle it. She kept trying to convince her mother that everything would be fine. But the closer it got to the time that Roland was supposed to drop Lauren's car off, the more worried Lauren got, and therefore the more worried Jill got.
Yeah.
Finally, Jill called campus police dispatch, hoping for an escort for Lauren to pick up the car from the lot in the football stadium. So, like, instead of Roland coming to her apartment, he would drop the car off in a public lot.
Yep.
She would have an escort to go get it, and then she'd be able to go home. That was what Jill wanted for Lauren. Yeah. It took some convincing because Lauren wanted to handle it on her own, but Lauren did eventually agree.
Okay.
It's likely that Roland had some sort of plan to try to forcibly convince Lauren to keep seeing him that night, although we'll never know for sure. But he soon saw that Lauren had gotten the police involved, and the car exchange did go smoothly because of that.
Okay.
Thankfully.
What date is this? I'm sorry.
This is October 10th.
Okay. This all is in from like what, the 2nd September?
September 2nd. It's like 5 weeks.
Holy shit. Okay.
Yeah. This was not the end of the story, however.
I know.
On October 12th, 2018, Lauren started receiving texts stating that Roland had died and that it was Lauren's fault.
Bye.
Yeah. That she'd caused him to kill himself was what the text had originally said. Although then she started getting texts that it was a car accident that he had died in. All of them urged her to come to his funeral. But then Lauren saw Roland post on the Facebook he wasn't supposed to have. So
I thought you were just going to call it the Facebook. I was like, that's not. Don't do that. You're not that old.
The Facebook. No, the Facebook he was not supposed to have.
Yeah. Okay.
So he seemed to be alive, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she started to worry that his tactics had changed from trying to get her back to trying to lure her off campus.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I have the chills.
Yeah. Although she couldn't prove it. This is just like her gut feeling. She didn't really know what to do, but she called the University of Utah Police Department to tell them about the weird texts and the ones about him being dead, but him not actually being dead and her fears. And they listened to her and the response was pretty simple. There's no threats. There's not much we can do.
Wrong.
I agree.
That is the wrong answer. Yep. Try again.
So this is the beginning of the University of Utah Police being shitty as fuck.
I can't fucking stand that if you're being stalked, they basically have to kill you for it to matter. It fucking pisses me off. Yep. Take this shit seriously.
Yep. And they don't. In this story, they don't.
No.
In most stories, they don't.
Right.
Yeah. And I will talk about some stalking stuff in this story too, just to like, because it's something people don't take as seriously as they really should.
No, they fucking don't. It's irritating.
Yep. So with Roland's schemes to get Lauren back falling flat, he decided to escalate again. And I say as he decided, but like he escalated again.
Of course he did.
I'm not sure it's really decisions he's making more than just impulses he's having. On October 13th, 2018, Lauren received another text from Roland. This time, he told her that he had explicit photos of her, and if she didn't pay him $1,000, he'd publish them online.
What?
Yep. This would be really traumatizing to anyone.
Yeah.
It's extortion, for one. And
revenge porn is illegal.
I was going to say, it's also called revenge porn in some places. Other places now call it non-consensual intimate imagery.
Oh,
but,
okay.
Yeah. But yes, it's revenge porn. Mm-hmm. It all means the same type of thing. And for Lauren, She's a high-performing college student and Division I athlete close to graduating. Like, yeah. She was terrified that this was going to ruin her life.
Yeah.
Like, she was, like, paralyzed with the fear that this was going to ruin her life.
Yeah.
By this time, she and Alex had realized that the campus police weren't moving very quickly, and they wondered if physically putting themselves in the police station would change anything.
Oh, my God. What the fuck?
So they went over there. Lauren and Alex went together. And they were interviewed by a young beat cop named Miguel Darris. And we will be talking about him a lot.
Fucking great.
He didn't even bring them back to an interview room.
Fuck you.
He talked to them in the lobby.
Are you kidding me?
In public, right by the front door. Like, that's how seriously they were not taking this. There is surveillance footage of all of this. So in the ESPN documentary, you get to see
this piece of shit being a piece of shit.
Yes. Yep.
I know that I really should be mad at the guy that kills Lauren, but I'm mad at this guy too.
There's multiple people we could be mad at in the story.
Cool.
Yeah. Alex recalled later that the officers, Darris and his partner, who I don't think was named.
Okay.
He doesn't really come up later anyway. They didn't seem particularly concerned about any of this. They suggested that the text might be a scam, that the extortion might be a scam. They didn't think it was connected to the other texts that Lauren had been receiving.
Oh, really?
Which is just fucking bonkers to me.
Really?
Yeah. They're just like, this all seems unrelated. One of them looked up, and it's hard to say which name he looked up because Lauren only knew him as Sean, even though that wasn't his name. So she was calling him Sean.
Right. But it's his middle name, but still, yeah, that's not going to get enough.
His name's Melvin, so he might have been going by Sean.
Yeah.
Like his whole life.
Yeah.
But they looked up Sean Roland or maybe Sean Fields, whatever name they looked up. They looked him up in the campus directory and commented that he seemed like a pretty good guy.
What?
Melvin Roland was not a student, so whoever they found wasn't him. Like, just the incompetence is outrageous.
I want to flip my desk.
Yep. That would be bad for our sound, just to clarify. At this point, Lauren and Alex felt like they weren't being taken seriously. They weren't being listened to.
Yep.
So they, on their own phones,
pulled
up Roland's sex offender status and showed it to the officers.
Wow. Wow.
And then they showed them the results they found on Google. Like, this is who we're dealing with here.
Yep.
At that point, the officer said they'd pass the information to a detective who happened to be out of town. It was the weekend, after all. They don't work on the weekends. But the detective would get back to Lauren once she was back in town. And probably Tuesday. That's what Officer Darris said. Probably Tuesday. Lauren and Alex were not thrilled with this response, obviously.
Yeah, no.
So they called the Salt Lake City Police Department.
Okay.
But because they were on campus.
Oh my God, not one of this. Dispatch
routed them back to the campus police because of the jurisdiction.
I'm seriously going to lose my fucking mind.
Yeah.
Does everyone get sued? Does Jill sue the fuck out of everybody? Good. Okay.
Yes, she does.
Okay.
Yep. So that, I mean, it's not going to change the outcome of this, but yes, they sue the shit out of this place.
Perfect.
So Tuesday, the day that the detective was supposed to call Lauren,
didn't call her,
came and went, and Lauren never received a call from any campus police detective. She called the Salt Lake City Police Department again late in the week and was again routed back to campus police.
Oh my God.
A female detective named Kayla Daloff finally called Lauren back on Friday, October 19th, 2018, telling Lauren that she was going to be out again for the weekend.
Okay.
And she'd be back in the office on Tuesday, October 23rd. And she'd get back to Lauren then.
You know what? Fuck off. I hope you never work again. This is awful.
I'm going to get into the really bad part of the story in a minute. I do want to say, like, on Tuesday, October 23rd, Lauren would no longer be alive.
I know.
Like,
yeah,
that's how shitty this all is.
Yeah.
Detective Daloff, in like the absolute minimum that she could have been doing for her job, did say that if Lauren received additional text messages from Roland that she could contact the police department again and share those with the police department.
I just want to say that I said that I know she's not alive. I didn't know, but I assumed.
Yeah.
Because you made a point to say that she's not coming back until Tuesday. But great, yeah, while he continues to harass her all weekend, go ahead and call the fucking police department that's not going to do fucking shit.
Right.
Which you just fucking told her.
Yeah, exactly. So over this weekend, Lauren texted campus police 3 additional screenshots of Roland's criminal history and continued harassment.
Oh my God.
So she's doing a lot of their work for them and they're still not doing anything. On Monday, October 22nd, 2018, Lauren received another alarming text. It was from a number she didn't know. And the text claimed that it was the deputy chief of campus police.
No.
Texting her. The text was asking her to go to the police station to meet him.
No.
Lauren had her doubts at this point. Thank God.
Yeah.
Since Roland had been pretending to be other people this entire time.
Yeah.
So she called Officer Darris, and he confirmed that that was not the deputy chief's number. He told her not to answer. Ignore it, he said.
Okay.
Lauren called Alex, still frustrated. Alex asked Lauren if she'd sent the information to campus police, and Lauren confirmed that she had in a text message to Alex later in the afternoon. That was the last time that Alex ever heard from Lauren.
Oh my God.
So what Lauren didn't know at the time was that Roland had been lurking around campus for days prior to this. Mm-hmm. At this point, he was a known figure on campus, and people in Lauren's dorm would let him into the building, recognizing him as Lauren's boyfriend.
Oh my God.
He like basically befriended everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's part of his
manipulation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No one suspected a thing, and Lauren hadn't seen him in person since the morning after they broke up, but he'd seen her. So before I get into the murder itself, I want to talk a little bit about stalking because it is really misunderstood.
Yeah.
The definition of stalking is, and I quote, a pattern of behavior directed at a specific person that would cause a reasonable person to fear for the person's safety or the safety of others, or suffer substantial emotional distress. Now think about what I've been telling you about Lauren. Mm-hmm. Think about Roland befriending the people in Lauren's dorm room, mm-hmm. borrowing her car, mm-hmm. texting her from random numbers, lurking around campus, even when he wasn't with her. There is a haunting surveillance video of him in a Deadpool costume wandering around campus.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I don't know what date it's from, but like before all of this, like, I think they were broken up, but the rest of this hadn't happened yet. Like what I'm about to tell you hadn't happened yet, but like that wasn't alarming to anybody.
So scary.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So a lot of people, including law enforcement, they really, as we talked about, they don't take stalking very seriously.
No.
Because it's used so colloquially now with people that don't really know what it is. Like, I'm stalking this guy on the internet. I'm a stalker online. Yeah. Like, that's not what it means.
No.
Stalking is an actual crime.
Yes.
And people just don't use the word right.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
I'm happy you bring this up now because in the case that I'm covering next week, mm-hmm. there's stalking involved.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm very happy that you brought this up because I did not think to do so. So thank you.
Yep. What we do know, Roland was stalking Lauren.
Absolutely.
100% he was. And he did not have good intentions while doing it. Most stalkers don't.
Right.
They have terrible impulse control issues and just control issues in general.
Yeah.
And they don't like people getting through their fingers.
Oh, God.
For a lack of a much better way to say it.
Right.
So at the end of this episode, I'm going to include additional resources regarding stalking, along with some of the other stuff that I've shared in other episodes, mm-hmm. like domestic violence hotlines and stuff. We're going to go into all of that at the end.
Okay.
But I do want to shout out, it's called SPARC, SPARC, and it's like a stalking prevention organization. They do free online trainings. They're so good.
Okay, good.
And I'll share that website when we get later into the episode, but like that's where I know most of this. I've been taking a lot of the trainings for my job.
Yep.
And it's just horrifying. It's horrifying information.
Absolutely.
It's even more horrifying that like no one takes it seriously.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now I'm going to tell you about the murder of Lauren McCluskey.
Okay.
On the day that Lauren got the alleged text from the deputy chief of campus police, Roland had been lurking around campus all day. Mm-hmm. He had a small black bag with him. You can see it in several surveillance videos of him on that day. Eventually, some guys in Lauren's dorm let him into the building, and you can see him like fist bumping them in the video, like they knew him. And he clearly wasn't sharing that they had broken up because he didn't want them to know that.
Okay, but, and that's not, oh my God. It's so frustrating because it's not her job to tell people that.
No, absolutely not.
Stop letting people in your, if you don't have a key, I don't care.
Right.
She can come get you if you're supposed to be here.
Yes.
That person can come get you. I won't let you in.
And a lot of, I don't know if this was the case then, a lot of dorms now, there's like a sign-in log.
Yes.
Like if you don't have a key to the building, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how often you're there. You have to sign it and sign out.
Absolutely.
And that wasn't the case
right
here then, at least. Roland hung out with these guys. I think they're playing video games while he waited for Lauren to return to the dorm.
Oh my God.
He asked one of the guys who he'd gotten friendly with over the weeks if he wanted to see what was in his bag.
What?
The guy was like, sure. And Roland showed him. It was a gun. So, like, again, he is a felon. And he's just carrying a gun on campus in a, like, it's a black tote bag looking thing.
I don't think you're allowed to have firearms on campus.
You're not.
Nope.
Yeah. So there's a lot wrong with
this. So, like, specifically this campus, right? No firearms were allowed. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yep. That was noted in a couple things I read
and
saw. Yep. So this was a Monday. Lauren had night class on Mondays. And this Monday was no different. Her class ended at like 8:15, 8:30. Mm-hmm. After her class ended, she called her mom while she walked back to her dorm, which is something that I have done on so many occasions where I'm just like walking or doing something meaningless. And I call mom and just chat with her for like 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. Jill McCluskey was on the stair stepper in their basement when Lauren called her. So she put Lauren on speaker while she finished her workout. Mm-hmm. Matt McCluskey, Lauren's dad, he could hear them chatting from the other room. They both said Lauren sounded really happy in that call. I think she felt like she was finally going to be able to start moving on from Roland. She had done really well in a quiz that day. Like she had a project due at midnight that she was almost done with. Like she was normal everyday stuff. And they noted like they were really happy to hear her voice like that again because it'd been missing for a month or so.
Yeah.
She told her mom that she loved her, preparing to end the call as she approached her dorm. And then her mom heard her say no.
Oh my God.
And then no, 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 no. And then the line went quiet, but not dead. While Jill was yelling for Lauren, Matt got on his own cell phone and called campus police. He explained what happened. Like, we were talking to her. All of a sudden, she started yelling no a bunch of times. And then the line went quiet, but it's still connected. Jill is still on the phone. So the police called it in as a kidnapping. While Matt was on the phone, someone else picked up Lauren's cell phone and started talking to Jill. The other girl said that she found the phone and backpack on the ground right outside the dorm and noticed that there was an active call. So she picked it up.
Oh my God.
And Jill told her to please call the campus police to give them the location. So the girl on her own cell phone called campus police to be like, this is where I am. This is where I found this stuff. The campus at this point all got texts telling them to shelter in place. And police started searching for Lauren. It was all too late at this point. Roland had seen Lauren walking back to her dorm. He was like hiding in the bushes, basically. Mm-hmm. He tackled her to the ground before dragging her to the car he'd borrowed from a friend and parked in her parking lot. It was like a big sedan, I think. He shoved her in the back seat and shot her 7 times.
Oh my God.
Lauren was 21 years old. And then Roland fled. Police located the car and Lauren about an hour later. They gave the campus the all clear, but they still didn't know where Roland was. So the all clear was like, suspect is no longer on campus. And like they had the whole parking lot blocked off. They didn't have a good plan for students. So students were like, there's video of them like looking out dorm windows, like what's going on in the parking lot? Like, can you imagine then finding out that someone got killed?
No, I can't.
So there are a lot of things about this story that absolutely infuriate me. But I actually haven't told you most of them yet. We're going to get to them.
Great.
I know. But this, what I'm about to tell you, is certainly one of the worst ones. Roland walked off campus after shooting Lauren. He went to a bus station where he was picked up by a woman he met online.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Then they went on a date.
Oh my God.
He went back to her apartment after their dinner and he took a shower.
Oh my God.
And she had no idea what had happened. So she was like, yeah, you could use my shower, I guess. Weirdo.
Was there no blood on him? Must not have been noticeable.
It didn't sound like it. If there was, it wasn't noticeable. But like,
he shot apparently her seven times.
Apparently he was pretty sweaty. Like that was why the girl was like, yeah, you can go take a shower.
Gross.
I know. He then left her apartment after she turned on the news and saw a surveillance photo of her car with Roland getting into it after he'd shot Lauren.
He left after she turned on the news?
Yep. Thankfully, he ran instead of hurting her. Like, thank God. Because she honestly got really lucky.
Yeah.
Holy shit. And then she called the police and told them everything she knew. And he probably didn't tell her his real name, just like he did to Lauren. Like, he probably was lying to her the same way he was lying to Lauren.
Yeah.
At that point, Roland walked himself to a local AME church in Salt Lake City while police closed in on him. It's the African Methodist Episcopal Churches.
Okay.
It's a denomination that's pretty specifically like black churches.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. I could have written it out and I didn't. So, okay. Roland died in the church from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Fuck that guy forever.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope.
Gotta traumatize some more people?
Right. Yep. And like also, that means that to a lot of people, it felt like he escaped justice, basically.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So deep breath, because now I'm going to tell you about the many failings of the University of Utah.
Please.
So this was discussed as a tragedy immediately afterwards, but the University of Utah did not want to take any accountability for their shortcomings that may have led to this all occurring. Mm. Several independent investigations took place, and all of them found that the police hadn't done their jobs as effectively as they should have.
No way.
I know. Both Officer Darris and Detective Daloff were fired.
Fuck yeah.
And both found jobs at other police departments in Utah soon afterwards.
Fuck no.
Yeah.
But who would hire them?
That happens a lot. Police departments don't talk to each other. You hear about people getting fired for like excessive force and sleeping with different people and whatnot, and they just find jobs at other police departments. Like no one checks that. There's no
databases. No one asks, why were you fired?
I think a lot of time they don't say that they were fired. I think they say like, well, I resigned. And oftentimes it's like, you resigned because the other option was to get fired. But like, that's not the part that they're sharing.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So yeah, they were both hired at other police departments. You're going to hate them both even more when I get into some of this other stuff. But let's talk about first the specific failings of the University of Utah and their police department.
Okay.
So first things first, there was no reason other than poor prioritization and lack of caring that Detective Daloff never followed up with Lauren. Particularly once she reported that she was being extorted in exchange for not posting her nudes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this should have been a priority at this point.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, this is what got Detective Dalla fired from the police department. After Lauren was murdered, she failed to follow up with another female victim, which ended up causing harm to that victim as well. She didn't get murdered.
Oh my God.
But yeah, so like this ended up being a pattern for this particular detective.
Oh my God.
Yep. So basically, she is a shitty detective. And I don't really feel that bad for dragging her a bit because she's already been dragged everywhere else.
Good. Drag her.
She needs to take some accountability that she is still not taking. I think she's a deputy at some sheriff's department somewhere in Utah.
Oh my God.
There are several things in this case that could have prevented Lauren's murder. And this lack of follow-up is one of them.
Yes.
100%.
100%.
There is nothing stopping from police approaching people and asking them to chat. There's nothing wrong with, you don't need a warrant. You don't need a, you mean need a reason, I guess, but you don't really, you can just go and be like, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
And then be like, why are you continually bothering this person?
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't help, then you at least have started a process.
But you know what? They don't give a shit.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. They didn't, at least. Yeah.
Wow. Women really just are fucking disposable to some people.
Yep. Yep. Would talking to Roland have alone prevented Lauren's murder? Maybe not.
No, but it would have at least put him, like, you are on our radar.
And also, he would then be on alert.
Yes.
Like, it's not only them being like, hey, we're telling you that you're on radar, but it's also him being able to realize, like, oh, people are watching me.
Mm-hmm.
And
maybe I shouldn't hide in the bushes. Maybe I shouldn't walk around in a Deadpool costume.
And he was on probation, too. So, like, that should have been a little clue to him, like, oh, shit, if they tell my probation officer that I'm extorting someone, which is a crime.
Oh, my God.
Like, maybe I'll have to go back to jail. And that leads into my next thing. I think the biggest mistake made in this case was that no one ever called Roland's probation officer.
I was going to ask that a little bit earlier, but the problem is that the only person that gave a shit would have been Lauren or Alex, and that's not fair. You can't put that on them.
And I don't know if the names of probation officers are public record where, like, Lauren or Alex could have found that, but they're sure in police databases. Like, they're sure in corrections databases that police officers have access to. And one thing that is known in the independent investigations is that Officer Darris, who had all this info from Lauren, was in continual contact with Lauren, never checked his Roland's probation status. Never once. We are going to get to him. It's coming. So they never called his probation officer. Mm. Roland had violated his parole in multiple ways during the two-ish weeks.
He had a gun.
Yeah, like even while they were dating, but especially in the two-ish weeks after Lauren broke up with him, he violated it multiple times. He was posting on Facebook. He was on dating apps. He had a gun with him. He extorted Lauren for $1,000 with sexual images of her that he wasn't allowed to have.
Right.
Like, he shouldn't have had those photos anyway. Him taking them was a violation of his probation.
Right.
Like, all of it was.
I forgot about the porn thing, but yeah, you're right.
Yep, yep. Like, he should have been put right back in prison prior to her death on any one of these things. But no one called his office, like, his probation officer. So she had no idea. And he wasn't arrested for anything. So it wouldn't, like, be flagged, you know?
Right, right.
So on the ESPN documentary, I mentioned this earlier, they did interview Roland's last parole officer,
mm-hmm.
and they showed her some of the things that he'd been doing. They played her some recordings of him saying different things about things he'd done in his past and whatnot, and she was crying.
Oh my God.
Like, she was crying in the interview, and she was like, if I had known these things, I think I could have helped by taking him back into custody.
Yes.
And I just think the biggest fucking failure of the campus police in this entire case was failing to reach out to that parole officer when Lauren made her first report about him. Because it would have been just a random check. She could have gone to his house. She probably would have found the Facebook, found the images on his phone, found all these different things that could have sent him back to jail prior to the extortion.
Right.
Prior to all of this.
You know, and it kind of makes me wonder that, honestly, probably even prior to him meeting Lauren.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know that
he was already on dating apps and he was already on Facebook.
Correct.
Yeah. And he was probably already borrowing guns from people and stuff, too. Yeah. And, like, I think they kind of made it sound like, oh, like, we were so busy, we were understaffed. And it's like, it's a phone call. It's one phone call. I also hate making phone calls, but I can take 5 minutes out of my day to call someone to get, like, a piece of info that could change everything.
Mm-hmm. I feel bad because I don't really want to drag this parole officer, but
I know it's a complicated position, because if she truly didn't know, but she did also say that like she did know he was on dating apps and it wasn't enough to send him back to jail, she thought. So she just gave him like a written warning. So like there were some failures on her end too, but she's like, the extortion was a crime that definitely would have sent him back to jail. Hmm? And the sexual images would have sent him back to jail.
Jesus fuck.
So like she was like, basically we're understaffed too. We have to weigh some of this stuff. And like, they wouldn't have taken him for Facebook and for the dating apps, but they would have for these other things that I didn't know about.
Right.
So I agree. I don't want to drag her. I think she was doing the best she could for having like 100 cases, mm-hmm. but it all just sucks. And it was just a big fucking failure all around. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we're going to move on to the specific failures of Officer Miguel Darris. Hmm. Let's start with the lackluster report he made regarding the extortion.
Okay.
And not taking her to an interview room or anything. So after that report was made, Officer Darris contacted Lauren again, requesting that she send him the compromising photos, you know.
What?
For the investigation.
What? No. Yeah, no.
He said he needed to see
them. No.
And she didn't know any better, so she sent him.
Oh my God. That poor girl.
Darris then downloaded those photos onto his personal phone and showed them to several officers in the department, bragging that he could look at them anytime he wanted.
That's fucked up. That's so fucking gross.
It's absolutely disgusting, and it gets worse.
Isn't that illegal?
So let me finish.
Because she
this.
Sent it to him, maybe not, but
let me tell you this last couple sentences, then we'll go back to that. I want to return to that. Don't let me forget.
Okay.
Officer Darris was on scene the night that Lauren was murdered, and a higher ranking officer mused, looking at her dead body, that he wondered what she would have looked like, you know, not dead. And fucking Officer Darris was like, I got you, bro. And he showed this guy the nudes at the fucking crime scene.
Oh, my God.
Lauren's mouth was just hanging open for those who
couldn't. Oh, my God.
That was, I almost threw up when I like got to that part in reading about this. Like, the fucking disrespect, among other things.
Fucking jail? Question mark?
Yeah. So, returning to that, this all came out in several internal investigations within different police departments. He was fired from his second department because of this.
Good. But I'm sure he's still fucking working somewhere else.
I don't know what he's doing now. The DA for the state of Utah and the county that he was in or whatever said that they searched high and low and couldn't find a state statute to charge him with.
Are you fucking kidding me?
No. So they're like,
that's fucked up.
It was like, it was a violation of victim rights. It was all this internal investigation, internal affairs stuff wrong within the police department. But criminal statute wise, they couldn't find anything to charge him with.
How is that not considered some sort of like revenge porn? He showed people.
Yeah, I don't know.
Also, if she sent it to him on his work phone, he downloaded it on his personal phone.
Yep. Like that's part of the internal affairs stuff. That's like department policy violating, but it's not technically a crime is what they're saying.
I think that's a crime.
Yeah. So, second failure of Officer Darris. That was the bigger one, but both are failures. He didn't document anywhere that Roland was impersonating an officer in that text that Lauren got the day she died, which is also a crime.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope. So he talked to her on the phone. He's like, ignore it. It's not really our deputy chief. And then he did nothing. This would have been a great time to call the parole officer, for example. Did nothing. Because like that was at like, it was like late morning she called him, and she died at like 8:30 p.m. Like there was a whole business day in there that he could have called the parole officer and they could have gotten and found him.
I'm so angry right now.
Yep.
What?
So.
The fuck?
Now is the time.
That we flip tables?
That you watch the video I sent you.
Oh, for fuck's sake. All right.
So It is a, I'm going to prime it for you. It's a minute long clip.
Okay.
From the ESPN documentary.
Okay.
It is the investigative journalist asking Officer Darris some pretty simple questions.
Okay.
Lord, can you tell us what you just watched?
I watched a detective get asked why he did not follow up.
I'm only laughing because it's the most outrageous thing I've ever seen. Yes.
And this is what happened.
The blinking while the wheels slowly turned is outrageous.
Oh my God.
So that's who we're dealing with. That's Officer Darris.
I mean, even the interviewer is like, what the fuck?
Dude? Yes.
Like, are you going to respond? Are we going to talk about this at all?
I think my favorite part of it is that he's like, he sits for how long you think? Like 30 seconds?
Oh, for sure.
And then he goes, asked him. Like.
Yeah. What do you think? Oh, my God.
So.
Oh, and then he goes, well, that's what, you know, I just was not trained. It should have gone to a more seasoned officer. Nope.
No.
Nope.
No, absolutely not.
Like, no.
That's not how.
You don't get to push this off on someone else. No. Fuck you.
Right. Like that. How easy would it have been? You've gotten several reports from the same person about this guy harassing her. Mm-hmm. Just go be like, my guy, what you doing?
Yeah.
And that's literally all you'd have to do.
Yeah.
You don't have to like, you don't have to be a detective to know how to be like, sup, man.
But
why are you here?
But like, make sure, like, just putting yourself on his radar.
Yes. Yes. No, exactly. Exactly.
Could have changed everything.
Yep. Everything. Yep. So that particular clip just like stunned me. And I felt like that's Officer Darris.
Cool.
Yeah. So we're going to zoom out a little bit now. Oh, I don't really write much about Detective Dalef anymore, okay. But she was found to basically, like, she got fired. She was very bad at her job. Like, she was just basically found to have been, like, negligent in her work.
Yeah.
So I didn't write any other things about her, but that's just, she was bad at her job.
Yeah.
So now we're going to zoom out a little bit. The University of Utah failed in other ways as well. Mm-hmm. The president of the university first stated that she was going to have an investigation look at the individual actions of officers that could have prevented Lauren's death. Mm. And then she walked that way back and said that nothing could have prevented Lauren's death.
Nope.
Particularly nothing that any individual had done.
What?
Or more accurately, not done.
What?
Yep. So, and it kind of went on like that, like very bland statements, clearly written by lawyers and publicists and stuff like that. Like they were trying to maintain the reputation of the university to keep recruiting while also trying to like deal with the fact that a student was murdered that they could have prevented.
Right.
So finally, I think it was probably like 6 to 8 months after Lauren was murdered. The McCluskeys sued the university for negligence, among many other things. I didn't write it all down.
Yeah.
It did include the fact that Officer Darris shared compromising photos. It included all the stuff with the police investigation. Like, it included all that stuff.
Yeah.
They settled 2 years later for $13.5 million.
Okay.
Which was all donated to charity. And I'm going to talk about that in a few minutes.
Okay.
I'm not sure the university has ever taken direct responsibility for the part that they played in Lauren's murder.
Are you kidding me? What university is this again?
University of Utah.
Mm, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And they were dragged by ESPN too, among other things. So
okay. It's,
they know they fucked up and they're just kind of like, do, 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 do.
How hard is it to just say, I'm sorry. We totally fucked this up.
Right. Yeah. I apparently very hard for some people. So even though they have not taken direct responsibility, I mean, you and I are having this conversation. I've said it's documented elsewhere too. Like, it's pretty easy to see that stuff from the outside looking in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whether they admit it or not, this is all public record now.
Right.
And like, people know.
Yeah.
And that leads me into our final failing of the University of Utah, in at least final failing in this story.
Well, yeah.
I want to touch on another case that happened at the University of Utah. Zhifan Dong was an international student from China studying at the University of Utah. In early 2022, she'd been telling the University of Utah police that her ex-boyfriend had been threatening her. There had been domestic violence reports. Zhifan had gotten a temporary restraining order against him. And then in early February 2022, she went missing.
Are you kidding me?
She was found on February 11th, 2022 in an off-campus hotel room.
Oh my God.
Her ex had injected her with a fatal dose of heroin and fentanyl.
Oh my God.
And then he tried to overdose himself and failed. So he is in prison. Zhifan had been 19 years old at the time.
Oh my God.
Again, complete failure of the University of Utah Police Department.
Yeah.
It was the Salt Lake City Police Department that found her. It wasn't the University of Utah Police that found her. And her family in China also recently got a multi-million dollar settlement from the University of Utah. And they had to basically state that her death could have been prevented and wasn't. And that was 4 years later. So it seems to be a bit of a pattern of failures at the University of Utah. And I do feel like it's probably affecting their recruiting.
Yeah.
Because I certainly wouldn't feel safe there.
Fuck no.
Yeah. To know that the police don't take women seriously. Why would any women go there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's my first thought in reading all of this. Why?
Yeah.
So, okay. To move on to some, I don't want to say lighter, but a little bit of a happier end to this to the best of our ability. Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about the Lauren McCluskey Foundation and Lauren's okay. Promise.
Okay. Am I going to cry?
Maybe.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
So in the wake of Lauren's murder, her parents started the Lauren McCluskey Foundation, which is where their large payout from the University of Utah also went. Mm-hmm. So it all funded this foundation. Mm-hmm. The Lauren McCluskey Foundation provides financial support for underprivileged students who are interested in athletics.
Mm.
As part of their goal to continue to honor Lauren, they hold two running races each year as well. One in Pullman, Washington, and one in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Mm.
It's called the Race for Campus Safety, and you can run it virtually, which is what I did last year.
Yeah. Oh, I am going to cry. Fuck.
Yeah. Additionally, the Lauren McCluskey Foundation organizes Lauren's Promise. Mm. Universities around the world have professors and other campus staff vowing to uphold Lauren's promise, which is, this is the vow, I promise to listen and believe you if someone is threatening you, represent a safe haven for sharing incidents of sexual assault, domestic violence, and stalking, and change campus culture that responds poorly to dating violence and stalking.
Oh my God.
And then people can like put it on their office doors and stuff like, I took a vow to Lauren's promise.
Oh my God.
Yep. There was nothing like that when I was going to school.
Nope.
I can tell you that much. And
nope.
As tragic as this case truly is, I'm really glad that there is now.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Like, this is something where I feel like I'm going to go a little generational here, like millennials, maybe even Gen X and later, but millennials for sure. We're not the old school type of generation where like we suffered so everyone else has to.
Right.
I feel like we're more of like, we would like to make things better for those coming after us.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that this stuff is changing because I think this could have been very, like, I knew some people who were in pretty bad relationships. And like, this could have made a huge difference.
Absolutely.
If they knew that they had professors they could go talk to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even like other campus staff, like you and I have talked about like Title IX offices and stuff. We didn't know where the Title IX office was in my mm-mm. campus.
No.
I had no idea there even was one.
We had an LGBTQ center, mm-hmm. and that was kind of like, it felt like it was the only like safe place on my entire campus.
Yeah.
Which whether is that's like, true or not, that's just what it felt like.
Right. And like, that's not how it should be.
No.
So I'm really happy that things are changing mm-hmm. for the better mm-hmm. for those of us coming behind us. Like, I don't want anyone to suffer like I saw some of my friends suffer.
Right. Yeah.
So I would rather people have more resources than less.
Same.
So now we're on to final thoughts with Lauren. In my terms for me, I will just say this case was probably one of the harder ones for me to write. Mm-hmm. I really procrastinated writing it.
Yeah.
I know most murders and violent crimes are preventable to some degree, but this one was so preventable, it like hurt to tell.
Yeah.
So, and it just like, I don't know. I run. Like, it just kind of hits me close to home.
Yeah.
So, what do you think? What do you think of this?
It's... Everything is so infuriating, but it's almost more infuriating that these police officers got away with it and then continued.
Yeah.
They're allowed to continue these patterns. They're not held accountable. And they should be. Yeah. I mean... I'm not going to say we're going to go dox these people. We're not going to go drag these people. That's not who we are.
Right.
But you deserve to know that people know that you're shitty and you don't deserve your job.
Yeah.
You honestly, I believe you should be jailed for some of these crimes, but apparently they're not crimes.
I do think that there should be, especially in after the reckoning that has taken place in the summer of 2020 and afterwards, mm-hmm. There should be more crimes that police can be held accountable for.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times police are given immunity and it's not right, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's probably a conversation for a different time. Yep. But I don't disagree with you. There are a lot of things here where like it's a total abuse of power.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, my understanding, I should probably explain this. My understanding of the reason that Officer Darris went on that ESPN documentary and agreed to be interviewed, because Detective Daloff did not.
Yeah.
Is I think he wanted to talk about how he felt he and Detective Daloff were scapegoated. And he felt like it wasn't their fault. They were just doing their job in the university and everyone scapegoated them. And he wanted to be treated more fairly. He actually sued the university too. He lost. But...
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think he was unprepared for the investigative journalist that was sitting in the chair opposite for him.
I was going to say, you mean for the really hard questions?
Yeah.
The hard, what like, should you have done?
Why didn't you do anything?
Yes.
Like, that's not that hard of a question, but yeah.
And you know what? I will also say that it is kind of the Salt Lake City Police Department's fault because
they wouldn't step
she should have. She should have been able to call them and dispatch should have given her to the police.
Yeah.
That's not fair. This jurisdictional bullshit.
Particularly since Roland wasn't a student.
Right.
And like didn't, his address was not on campus.
Right.
So yeah, well, I agree with you. Like whenever he had his driver's license.
Yep.
Like that wasn't on campus. Right. So that probably would have fallen under the jurisdiction of Salt Lake City Police.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're right. They totally could have stepped in. Just because she was a student didn't mean that they couldn't do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
So those are my final thoughts, that it's everyone's fucking fault. Except for Lauren's.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Alex.
And Alex.
Because she was the best.
Yeah. And she sounds like the best.
She, both Alex and Lauren's friend from high school were interviewed on the mm-hmm. ESPN documentary too. Mm-hmm. And they're both like, just like, shining lights. Like you could tell that for them to be Lauren's friends, like Lauren must have been that way too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So anyway, I would like to talk a bit about resources and yes, then please. Go into sources. So I have information on several different places that you can go online or call if any of this hits a little close to home, if you need anyone to talk to. I first want to talk about RAIN. Which is a known anti-sexual violence organization. I can't remember. It's Rape and Incest Network or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, but RAIN. So you can call RAIN 24 hours a day at 1-800-656-4673. I'm going to repeat that again. RAIN, the number to call them 24 hours a day is 1-800-656-4673. And you can also visit them online at rain.org. That's RAINN.org. I talked about SPARC, which stands for the Stalking Prevention Awareness and Resource Center. Mm. You can visit them online for additional information at stalkingawareness.org. They do have a backlog both on their website and on YouTube of trainings they've done online. You can learn about stalking. You can learn about stalking in public like public culture and stuff. You can learn all like prevention, all this stuff. Mm. They have a playlist of songs that talk about stalking that have been normalized and part of why stalking is normalized. It's actually a pretty fire playlist, but also if you listen to the words, it's terrifying.
Yep.
So like you and I, Lauren, a couple weeks ago with your boyfriend talked about the song Stan.
Oh, yeah.
And like that's on their playlist. They talk about Stan a lot. Like it's a really, really good resource for people who want more information about stalking.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the domestic violence hotline. You can call them at any time at 1-800-799-SAFE, which is 1-800-799-7233. Mm. You can send them a text by sending the word START to 88788. That's the word START to 88788. And you can also visit them online at their website, which is thehotline.org. Mm. And finally, because this story was pretty horrific and there is some mention of suicide in the story, I want to make sure that everyone is aware of the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. You can call them at any time at 988. They're 24 hours a day, and you can visit their website if you want more information. It's 988lifeline.org.
Hmm.
Anything else before I go into my sources?
No.
Okay. So I read a lot of really great journalism related to this case. In the Deseret News, there's an article called What Really Happened to Lauren McCluskey, the Inside Story of Her Tragic Death by Jillian Friedman. On CBS News, an article called University of Utah Student Made Final Phone Call Before Being Slain, Family Says, by CBS News editors. The Salt Lake Tribune has covered this so well. I found three excellent articles in the Salt Lake Tribune. The first one's called University of Utah Police Officer Showed Off Explicit Photos of Lauren McCluskey to His Coworker by Courtney Tanner. So, like, they're putting it all out there.
Mm-hmm. Good.
They're dragging everybody.
Good.
Another article called How the University of Utah's Police Department Treated Female Victims and Officers for Years Before Lauren McCluskey's Killing by Courtney Tanner. So I don't know if you know, there's another podcaster, Lauren, called Celine Beth Calderon Olson.
Okay.
I don't listen to her podcast, but she was really big in all of the Billy Jensen stuff.
Oh, okay.
When that came to light, she went to the University of Utah and was raped on campus. And the police department didn't help her. So she is interviewed in this article. It's very good journalism. So it's, yeah. So she is also in true crime podcasting. If people who listen to us, you might recognize her name. She is a known entity in true crime podcasting, and she is interviewed in this article.
Wow.
And then finally, in the Salt Lake Tribune, here's an updated timeline of the slaying of University of Utah student Lauren McCluskey and the reform that has followed. Mm. And that is by Courtney Tanner and Sean P. Means. On ABC News, I read something called Family of Murdered College Athlete Lauren McCluskey Settles with University of Utah for $13.5 million by Rama Ahmed. In Salt Lake Magazine, an article called Lauren McCluskey, The Tragic and Unnecessary Tale by Jen Hill. On NBC News, an article called A Student from China Told the University of Utah Her Boyfriend Was Threatening Her. She Was Found Dead Weeks Later by Zachary Shermelli,
okay.
Shermiel maybe. And then finally, things that I read, the Daily Utah Chronicle, an article called I Felt So Angry. Roommate of Jifan Dong says her death was preventable by Rachel Klopfer. I did read Lauren's obituary on legacy.com. It talked a lot about her early life and her interests and the stuff that she loved. So that's the obituary for Lauren Jennifer McCluskey, 1997 to 2018. And then I looked at the Lauren McCluskey Foundation website. I took right from that website what their mission is and stuff about the race and whatnot. I took the definition of stalking from the Spark website. I watched the absolutely excellent ESPN documentary on YouTube that's called Listen. ESPN investigates Lauren McCluskey's murder.
Mm.
It is so good. I think it's made by the same people that maybe do 30 for 30.
I was going to say, I love 30 for 30.
Yeah, it's so good. I listened to an episode of Court Junkie, It's episode 136, The Unanswered Pleas for Help. Mm. An episode of Murder in America that I listened to was episode 83, Utah, The Murder of Laura McCluskey. I think I texted you while I was listening to this one where it had like all the 911 calls.
Yeah.
I didn't mention this in the episode, but there's a couple in there that are just so infuriating to listen to because the dispatcher is like interrupting Lauren while she's trying to be like, well, I've talked to some other people and like, I have this ex-boyfriend. And she's like, what'd you call us for? Like the dispatcher is so not here to listen to her, which would have put me off entirely if I was the caller.
Yep.
So like just failure on failure on failure. And finally, I listened to a two-part series on the Least of These podcast. It was episode 16, Her Last Call, The Story of Lauren McCluskey, The Stalking. And then episode 17, Her Last Call, The Story of Lauren McCluskey, The Murder. Hmm. And that is the story of the stalking and murder of Lauren McCluskey and the many failures of the University of Utah surrounding the case. I want to shout out again the Race for Campus Safety. Hmm. It's normally at the beginning of October, which is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. It's also the month that she was killed. They do have a virtual option. I ran the 10K last year from afar. It was really cool. I'm wearing the shirt that I got from doing the virtual race as we record this. So just thinking of her, thinking of her family, thinking of the good things that her family is trying to do in the wake of this terrible tragedy. So that was how I wanted to end this episode.
Very well done.
Oh, thank you for listening, everyone.
Yes, thank you so much. And Sissy, very well done as always. And
thank you.
This is bringing the stalking definition was huge. So I do appreciate you doing that.
So you kind of already teased us. Next week, you're talking about stalking as well. So
I am. Do I tell people who I'm talking about next week? Or do I save it?
You can if you want to.
I guess just listen next week and find out who we're going to be talking about because it's awful and involves a lot of stalking.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for another wonderful week. And Sissy, thank you.
Of course. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. If you're looking to see pictures of the people we covered on today's episode, you can find us on Instagram at @amostwantedpod. We also post true crime trivia there every Sunday. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at @amostwantedpod. Find us and like us on Facebook at @amostwantedpodcast. You can send us an email at amostwantedpodcast@gmail.com. Visit our website at amostwantedpodcast.com. And please remember to listen, subscribe, and love. Bye.